Welcome to STEAM Powered, where I have conversations with women in STEAM to learn a little bit about what they do and who they are. I'm your host, Michelle Ong. My guest today is Dr. Sabine Bird. Sabine has a PhD in neurosciences in the area of Alzheimer's research and is passionate about STEM advocacy. She's also an endurance cyclist and holds the unconfirmed world record for most distance covered in a 24-hour period. Join us as we talk about STEM education and communication, Alzheimer's research, and endurance cycling. So thank you so much, Sabine, for joining me today on STEAM Powered. It is wonderful to have you on.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm excited about this.
Oh, yes, so excited. So you've had quite the journey. So you started studying sciences in Cologne, and along the way, you made your way to Perth and got your PhD in neurosciences.
Yeah.
So how did that happen?
So, yeah, as you said, I've always been interested in biological sciences in the first place. So I started studying biology with an emphasis on molecular aspects like genetics and neurophysiology and also some pharmacology to have a bit of a medical input. I always liked the idea to understand what happens in the body and how we actually function. And long story short, I eventually ended up in Perth many years later, and I just pursued it. There's a big leap in between. But what happened in the meantime is that in Europe, it is quite common to work alongside your studies. And we have a lot of opportunities where we can actually work for example, biotech companies as we study in our fields. So this is what I did. I studied biological sciences with a focus on molecular sciences. But at the same time, I worked for a biotech company for 3 years to increase my knowledge and to expand on skills and whatnot. So by the time I came towards the end of my studies, we had to finish off with a big laboratory project. And I decided to pack up my sciences and take that project over to Ireland to improve my English skills. At the same time, because all my studies up until that point were in German, which is not ideal for the scientific world, because the scientific language is English after all.
Yeah.
So after a few language barriers, I slowly got into the Irish world of speaking, and which was very very entertaining in parts. But I finished my studies with a 1 year laboratory project in Ireland. So that was a very valuable experience, not just from a cultural point of view, but also simply from a lab experience point of view, because back then the European countries were handling scientific processes a little bit different still, but it was just interesting to see how different laboratories worked.
So when you were, you know, deciding to take your education overseas and traveling, what made you decide to go to Ireland versus, you know, any of the other opportunities that you could have?
It worked out that way because mainly because it had to be an English-speaking country. I wanted to go to a country where there was English was a native language, just to improve my own skills, because they were rather appalling at the start. And so this way I was forced to improve on that skill at the same time as I had to do lab work. I guess that was the main reason. And also my now husband and boyfriend at the time, he was English speaking, so it made just life so much easier. But it turned out it was really the right choice. Ireland's a very nice country, very friendly and very approachable. And so it was a fun way of learning science.
Yes, definitely.
And after that, in between, I took a little 10-month Yeah, I suppose, which I kind of combined with my scientific work, and I came to Australia just before I went to Ireland, actually, just to do a semester here at the University of Western Australia, where I discovered a few subjects that I didn't have access to in Germany, for example, which hasn't got much to do with molecular biology, more like the world of animals in Australia is very unique.
Right.
So I started studying a few little courses in there.
Oh, nice.
But that was just a little side project, I suppose. But at the end of the day, biological sciences incorporate so many different things and so much variety. And my interest is so broad and also on all aspects of sciences that I thought it fit in anyway. So
yeah,
so altogether, my degree was quite an adventure, I must say. It was quite a journey.
Yeah, it was.
I was pretty happy when it was finished because now I could actually work and earn some money with all the things that I've learned.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
There's so many like great opportunities. Like I keep hearing about the way that the flexibility of education in Europe. And
yes.
You know, was the working while you were studying, was that part of internships? Is it a cultural thing? Is it a course thing where they encourage working in your field alongside your studies?
Yeah, that's a pretty good point, actually. And that's certainly something that the Europeans are probably a bit ahead of us. Probably also due to the population density, there are just more opportunities. For example, the region that I come from in Germany is called the ABC region. ABC is more of a biotech area. The three letters just come from the different cities, starting with the letters. But it's a biotech dense area. That means they rely on the future, they rely on students to come through and help them. And ideally, the students might even stay on if they enjoy it. But the main thing is that they are provided with a skill set that is incredibly valuable. And that makes the students over there incredibly valuable. And that's not just for German students, it's for European students in general. So internally, there's a lot of exchange programs amongst the different countries that are part of the European Union. And that certainly progresses science at an elevated pace. Whereas over here, we have opportunities, but they are rather limited compared to the European continent or even the US. But the funding is also different. Which is like, it is still possible to get valuable experience over here, but the more isolated we are, and particularly in Perth, we are very isolated.
Yes.
We struggle to keep companies here, or biotech companies here, and make a success. So that is certainly something to improve on in the future, to provide students with, I guess, industry.
More opportunities, yeah, and experience.
Yeah. It's simply industry, to attract industry, and this is the only way forward for the new generation to actually gain valuable experience that make them competitive for the international market.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's happening across all of those sectors as well. I mean, yeah. We're also having issues with, you know, there's a lot of, I guess it wouldn't be as bad as brain drain, but the number of companies based in Perth or with offices or outposts in Perth for any kind of, you know, high level science or technology is quite limited. And a lot of them have moved over east or internationally. So it's quite challenging for us to get those kinds of larger corporation, larger organization opportunities.
Very true. Yes. There is progress, which is good. It is just very slow. But Perth has a lot to offer. It is just a matter of making it attractive for these companies and businesses or corporations, really. But we're getting there slowly and steadily. It heavily depends on, at the end of the day, it heavily depends also on the government and how supportive they are of science and technology. And right now, there appears to be a real boost for that area, and especially for women in science. But that's also a huge push internationally to provide more opportunities for women in science. And I just want to point out, this is actually the real push for women in science doesn't come from a feminist point of view or anything like this. I think we finally learned to understand that the more variety we have in thinking skills, which also implies variety in thinking skills coming from different genders and different perspectives and viewpoints, the more valuable we can make a whole society. And the more variety we have, the more likely it is that we progress at a faster pace, and which is not necessarily a bad thing. But given that we live in such a technology evolving society, and we're heavily influenced by all sorts of technology, that also means that we need more and more thinking skills, more and more critical thinking, more and more STEM related thinking in order to actually deal with all that.
Yeah, definitely.
There's no way out. Yeah. So I guess like for women need to find their place in STEM way more than we can see right now, just to improve our own way of thinking at the
Definitely.
End of the day.
Yeah, of course. And I think I was just reading something the other day because, doing this show, I'm starting to be a bit more exposed to the academic community than I used to be.
Yeah.
And there were so many discussions where they were saying that, you know, because of how homogenous the academic field is, the ways of thinking are more limited, and they're finding that people, like in more diverse cultures and more diverse environments, like women, minority groups, people in those with those backgrounds are actually able to be more innovative, and they're creating more, they're coming with more novel ideas than we have recently with, you know, the current academic culture.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely increasing or broadening the way that we can think, broadening our opportunities and exposures just really is going to advance us in so many ways.
Yeah. So it's simply not that we that there is one gender with a higher intelligence or one gender that has a higher ability to deal with certain problems. It is literally just changing perspectives that drives survival, I guess.
Exactly.
And our society needs a little bit more, less stagnation in the way we think, I suppose, and a bit more progressiveness. But it is quite exciting if you see boys and girls play together in with little, where they actually have to solve problems. They work together really, really well. And it's only when we start imposing those stereotypes onto them that all of a sudden the thinking shifts into their little gender categories, and then with that comes maybe the belief that girls shouldn't be doing math or shouldn't be doing, or maybe they believe themselves that they're not so good at math, for example, or other science fields. But at the end of the day, I think I read a study not long ago, is that girls feel much more encouraged to pursue science areas at school, or even maybe a career, if they were encouraged all the way along. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe girls just need way more encouragement and way more little, little moments of success where someone pats them on the shoulder and said, you can do this and you're actually really good at it. And they appear to react to that sort of feedback much more than boys. So maybe that's something that a school system could incorporate, I guess. I'm not really a big fan of having schools where it's all boys and all girls schools. I do prefer it when they're mixed, but maybe in terms of STEM, it's not such a bad idea to give special encouragement to girls and maybe do split them apart. It's just an idea that came to my mind, but I have no evidence for this.
Well, it's just finding different ways of giving people the support that they need to be able to thrive.
Yeah.
So for some of them, they would need a mixed environment. Some of them would feel more comfortable being amongst, you know, other girls to be able to feel more secure in their development. So lots of different opportunities will just help make that happen.
No, it's true. And I'm glad to see that the government is actually putting an action plan together and is really trying hard right now to push STEM, women in STEM, that is, or girls in STEM.
Yeah.
And I hope that I can only think that it will be successful. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. And, you know, people are starting to get on board. People are coming with more ideas. It's just going to be just seeing how it all pans out.
Yeah, and I do think that it would probably help if more opportunities were there in the country. I mean, we live in Australia now. It has a lot of advantages, but our disadvantage is that we simply disconnected from the rest of the world, like geographically speaking. And if we had ongoing programs in place that allowed students in general, not just girls, to just travel and interact with companies and the industry in general, I think that would be quite helpful. And I think that's another way of tackling the problem of women in STEM, or lack of women in STEM.
Yeah, definitely. Giving more of this industry opportunities, because a lot of people as well, when they start to enter these fields, they don't necessarily see the potential in the futures. So it's like, I'll only be able to become an academic, or I'll only be able to do research. And being able to see industry applications and being able to apply these skills in all these other areas is just going to give them, I guess, more enthusiasm for wanting to approach these subjects.
That's true. So I've been heavily involved in science promotion in the previous years during my studies. And the one thing I noticed is that the education system in terms of primary school and high school here is quite different to other countries I've experienced. And it's still quite, there's not a very heavy focus on STEM-related fields, and I think that's certainly a good start there. But also I feel that a lot of kids here, that certain roles are imposed on them to have, they tend to have in private schools, they tend to have cooking classes, whereas the boys go to welding classes in very fancy private schools, for example. And I think that's quite an old-fashioned system, which means that the people behind the curriculum might also stick to traditional values more. And I think tradition is not always a good thing, and it stagnates a whole society. And especially when we talk STEM and women in STEM, we really need to change traditional thinking a little bit over time.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I mean, it's been quite a while since I've been at school.
Yeah.
But I attended a private school and we did have home economics classes. They so at the lower school levels, you know, we had to take them. It was an there was a point in upper primary school where they got us to experience some of the other subjects in senior school so that we could decide what we wanted to study once we got there. But home economics was a subject that you could do as a primary subject that you wanted to study.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, three of my friends, because we'd been watching a lot of American television, were seeing all these high school kids doing, you know, home ec, but also shop class. It's like, why don't we get shop class? I would love to have shop class. And yeah, just being able to give people more choices in the kinds of exposure they have to these experiences, yeah. That's just cool. And it makes you more well-rounded.
And especially in a world like today where things change so rapidly, we need to think about changing curriculums a bit more quicker as well. I mean, I'm not involved with this, but it's certainly a good opportunity, I guess. Especially when we talk about cybersecurity, it would be quite handy to have a whole class for students just to be aware of some basics. That makes much more sense than having home economics, because that's something they should really learn at school at the end of the day, at home, I mean, at the end of the day. But it's but in terms of cyber awareness, and given that every child plays with the phone when they're 3 years old and upwards, or just uses a computer even in primary school, so I think that would be a scientific area that
definitely
should be promoted much earlier, or in general. I don't think any class, any school currently promotes that sort of subject.
Yeah, well, not in a formal structure anyway. I know that's a few people who do work in, yeah, in communication areas where they are talking to children and adults who aren't that, you know, tech literate about cyber safety and online security and just general tech hygiene. So yeah, all of those things are so important given how ubiquitous technology is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel we went a little bit off track for a moment.
But, it's still very, no, that's fine. It's all very interesting. It's the kind of things that we do need to talk about. And it's the kind of things that, you know, we do need to think about when we're approaching, you know, where we're going to go with our lives, what we're going to do, the kinds of interests that we have, and the fact that they all overlap. Like, it's just a part of our society in so many ways.
Yes, true. So that's probably one thing that's quite important that doesn't come across very well with our young ones, is if you ask someone to, what is science and what do you think science is, they usually name four subjects, which is chemistry, physics, biology, and maths. But they don't understand, and no one explains it properly to them, that this is just the basic.
It's just the beginning.
Platform, exactly, from a whole range of work areas in sciences that are so different. We have, obviously, medicine is even part of it, and we've got social sciences, and we have, like, meteorology is completely different. And there are all these subjects emerging and popping up in every direction that just incorporate these four subjects. But it's not that someone becomes a physicist or a chemist that often. It's really just emerging of new industries.
And it is.
If we then explain to the kids that they just need to embrace these basic skills, and then from then on, maybe brand new areas can emerge that we don't even know of yet today. So I've been trying to encourage high school students to embrace as many subjects as they can and widen their horizon as best as they can, just to have the ability to think outside the box and merge knowledge and just to produce something completely new. Because it was a bit like in the 1980s, there were no biotech companies, or no proper ones anyway, and all of a sudden there was a CEO for a biotech company, and this person said, I had no idea what that is, and, and it's true, no one could prepare him for this position because it's just such a new area. And given that we now understand how critical it is to think outside the box and merge new knowledge and whatnot, we know exactly that there will be so many jobs in the near future that we have no clue of right now, or maybe just a faint idea. And we are the ones that have to prepare the new generation for these jobs, and we don't even know what they are. So, and I find it more and more crucially important as the years go by that we need to emphasize STEM in the educational system so much more than what we do right now. And it doesn't matter whether we're so distant or not. We have to put full thrust forward into promoting STEM on all levels and take the home economics class out of school.
Or maybe just try to work them all in together. Like, you know, just give them all work.
I mean, cooking is a science too, mind you.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, okay. So speaking of, you know, not knowing, you know, where all of these subjects can lead us. Like, even with my past guests, you know, there was someone who was saying, you know, when they first started university, stem cell research was so new, and it's been 20 years now. And, you know, look where we are now with what's available and what we can do with it. And someone was saying, you know, in one of the comments for the video, they said, you know, I'd love to see where stem cell research can take us. You know, one day it will save lives. It's like, actually, it's saving lives now. Like, all of this stuff is now applied sciences. It's not just theoretical anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are other people who, other guests who've gone, well, the field that I'm in now, I didn't know existed when I was in high school. In high school, it was, oh, this is chemistry. Well, you know, this is, you know, we understand sort of what geology is, but no, we can study meteorology on Mars, weather patterns that you see in space, all of these things. Like, because science is so broad, you know, one of the problems is you want people to understand the scope, but the problem is the scope is so large. Where do you begin?
Yes, exactly. So you kind of keep some order there. Yeah, no, it's true. And it's an enormous field, and it's, if it's not dominating the world right now, it will be next year. You know, it's science is in everything we do and everything we plan. And in simple terms, if you simply to learn about critical thinking and allow different viewpoints, I mean, you can actually enter a debate thinking that you're right, but then realizing that you're not, just by finally learning to see the same things from a different angle, is a tremendous value and personality trait. And just to have that as a background, it's worth studying it for. So just, I think our society has forgotten a little bit how to deal with criticism at times. What better field than science to do in order to just revive these crucial traits that make life a little bit more accessible and easier. But yeah, I think that there's some crucial traits in sciences that are just worth having.
Definitely. And I mean, what better field than science to let you learn all the ways that you're wrong?
Yeah, exactly. And we get very humble after a few years of understanding how the world works, or trying to understand how the world works, and then realizing that it is a rather complex matter.
More than just a little bit.
Yeah, yes.
So how did you go from biological sciences to, you know, it's not a big stretch, but how did you get from there to Alzheimer's research?
Yeah, so basically the background has always been in the laboratory, and the techniques that you use in the laboratory are pretty much applicable to any other area that uses lab experiments. When I came here, I always had an interest in brain research. So part of my studies was in neurophysiology in animals, learning about the different nerve systems. When I came to Australia, I had the opportunity to slide into Alzheimer's disease research, which was great because A, it dealt with humans, B, with human brains, and C, the interesting thing about it was that I was able to do laboratory work, but I shifted more and more towards doing clinical work with people, and I realized how much I actually enjoy working with people. So at some point, I wasn't in the lab that much anymore at all. And it was all about running clinical studies or being involved with observational studies and with the recruitment of people and taking them through the studies and doing neuropsychological assessments. So it became more and more a completely different field of science to what I had initially planned for, studied for. But it's nice to see the broad spectrum from the isolated world of a laboratory where you work 12 hours a day and do 1 year of troubleshooting for one single experiment and a lot of discussions and technical equipment checks and whatnot, to the entire other end of the spectrum where you just deal with people nonstop and explain the basics, and you change language as well, because obviously the technical language changes into layman's language. And so it was a tremendous experience that I definitely value highly. And so that's basically what happened, and I was very open to that shift. So Alzheimer's disease obviously plays an important role here. And not only that you work with people now, you also work with a whole spectrum of people. So it's not just the 60 plus or 80 plus people that have it, but also their families and maybe their kids that are now in their 40s and might be worried that they will get it one day. So you work on studies where you can maybe help prevent the onset. So instead of just working with the disease in itself. So yeah, again, there's a huge, huge opportunity to work in different areas, and prevention is a big deal. And when we talk about prevention, we look at genetic markers, we look at lifestyle factors, we look at maybe blood markers and diseases that are associated with it. So it's not so simple and straightforward talking about prevention. Yeah, so again, a scientific field in itself, dementia or Alzheimer's research, and it's a whole world of science involved on all levels.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, I can imagine. Like, yeah, just the breadth of scope, just from what you just described, from, you know, the pure sciences down to, you know, sociology, psychology, and all the environmental factors too.
Yes. So yeah, I really enjoyed that, I must say.
Yeah, that's amazing. So did that lead into your PhD, or was that part of your PhD? Like, which came first?
So no, I started working there first, and then it led into the PhD. So again, I was lucky in a way that I was able to do laboratory work from a PhD, but also clinical work, which made it difficult at times because it was certainly a lot of work involved to both. Also because the laboratory was 40 kilometers away from the clinical site. So, but that's okay. We got it all done in the end. And it includes so many other areas as well, just like statistics and large statistics and small scale statistics.
Yeah.
It's all learnable. So it's not, there's not a single scientist out there that's great at everything. Always has to be a connection, or it's always a discussion amongst group members, and every group member has a different field of, well, speciality, but also of a bit more skills on one side. And really in science, it's all about letting other opinions join your own thinking, or at least merge in with your own thinking. And that's what I really appreciate about science, is just simply that quite often you get not corrected on your way of thinking, but you get enriched from different sides.
Yes.
And you can make much better decisions. So when it really comes to show that how important it is troubleshooting, so you have a problem of any sort, and just to have different people of different backgrounds, slightly different backgrounds and expertise to come together and discuss that problem, it's a tremendous experience if you see that happening, how a problem gets solved just by that. It doesn't happen every day, mind you, but it happens eventually.
Yes.
And it's good. So this is like proper collaborative work, and this is how science works at the end of the day. Science only works in collaboration. There's never a single scientist. And I guess that's a bit of a myth that a lot of the young kids are still dealing with, is they think of this one single genius of, I don't know, they might watch, what's the show called again? I forgot now. Not Friends, but... can't think of it right now. Big Bang Theory, thank you. So especially in that show, as funny as it is, but there are all these four or five little geniuses, and everyone has got their little niche of expertise. In the real world, you have people that are passionate about sciences by all means, and you have the odd genius in there. But really, science works by having a lot of passionate people together trying to understand and learn and eventually coming to a solution. And it's not that one single person that solves the world. It's not the one brainiac that solves all the issues in the world. So that's a bit of a misunderstanding about how science works.
Yeah, and it's not an really individual exercise.
Exactly, not at all. It's really a team sport by all means. And it's not more than anything, really. And it's interesting to see how a lot of kids don't want to do science because they're not good at that. Or they're not good at math, but they're good at physics. But they're not good at chemistry, but good at biology. And so they say, no, I'm not good at all of them. But you don't need to. The main thing is that you have a passion. And sooner or later, you get the basics of all the subjects necessary to be good in your field. So and that's something that especially younger kids don't understand just yet, or teenagers. Passion is everything.
It is.
Or curiosity.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely curiosity more than anything else.
Yes. It's a very long-winded answer to a point.
Yeah. That was a good answer. So what did you like, what was your focus for your PhD studies?
So in my particular case, I was looking at a hormone that was just discovered by Harvard University the year before I started the PhD. And basically, we know that physical activity and exercise is good for the brain. This is old school rule, but we don't actually understand what happens. We don't know why we're saying that. We don't know why it is so good. So basically, we were investigating this hormone, if that could be one of the missing links on a molecular basis.
That's
Maybe
the beta amyloids.
well, it's irisin is your hormone. Beta amyloids are like the plaques that accumulate, the protein that accumulates in Alzheimer's patients that kills the cells. So maybe if we have something like a hormone like irisin, called irisin, maybe that's the one that can help improve the death rate of these nerve cells, and maybe that's what happens. So in exercise, maybe that hormone gets elevated, and then it has all these positive impacts on the brain. It's a very simplified version of the problem, description of the problem, but it's basically, at the end of the day, this is what we're looking at. That a lot more research is needed, as usual.
Of course.
But interestingly, I saw an article not long ago that someone investigated this particular hormone, irisin, in relation to COVID-19, and I thought, oh, I should have stayed with
Oh,
it.
you should have stuck with it.
Yeah, but there's certainly more to come on that one. And it's the first steps. Every time something new is discovered, it takes a few years to really figure out what it does and what it does to our body. That was just one little aspect.
Yeah, it was this. Yeah, but still very interesting. And I mean, with that hormone, like I saw some of your scholarly papers, and they were about activity and endurance, and other things to either reduce the beta amyloid or I guess increase the rate of that hormone.
Yeah.
So, because, and we'll probably talk about this later about your cycling, but how much of what you do in your recreational life, if you can call endurance cycling recreational, how much of the way that you had to your physical activity, the endurance, the training, how much did that play into your research into the way activity and all that affects Alzheimer's?
Interesting question. I think it's more the other way around. So having constantly deal with problems in a scientific area, you need a lot of time to think, and maybe that's how the cycling started, because it gives you a lot of alone time, especially in, as you already mentioned, endurance rides, to think about problems and solve. That's when you solve the world's problems, really. But no, the exercise, I by regularly reading about the positive effects of exercise on brain health, it certainly motivates me to keep going. We do know that cycling is a pretty good sport, if you survive the traffic, that is. Because the interesting thing about this particular sport is that if you think about it, you need to hold a balance on your bike. So holding a balance is a tremendous workout for the brain, for holding balance in general. At the same time, you need to look out for hazards and hurdles and traffic. So you're focusing on that at the same time as keeping the balance. And you need to know where you are. So you have the navigation system running in the brain as well. So there are just three tremendously energy-consuming activities happening in the brain. So from that point alone, and plus you have your own thoughts, and your energy metabolism is increased and whatnot. There's so many things are happening right now that affect the brain just by riding a bike. I find it rather interesting to just focus on that as I ride my bike, and I have all these pictures and imaginations of my nerve cells firing up in different areas of the brain, depending on what I'm doing, or whether I get a bit of a scare somewhere, or hit a pothole or something by accident. So all these different areas of the brain are constantly activated. It certainly motivates me, let's say it this way.
That definitely is one way to get motivated to stay on a bike.
It's definitely good, and I can't say that my cognition is impacted in a negative way just by riding
That's brilliant.
But in terms of endurance riding, I suppose it's probably a bit more detrimental, and the sleep deprivation doesn't help you.
Yes. Okay. So pros and cons.
Yeah, pros and cons. It's good to have a hobby outside your job, though. I can encourage you to do that.
So biomedical sciences, Alzheimer's, and, you know, you've done a lot of traveling. What other kind of interesting work have you, you know, done? What other experiences have you had?
So sciences has taken me to quite a few places, and I quite like reading and staying up to date with medical research, for example, as well, to a certain degree, that is. So I was able to, when I was volunteering for the Cancer Council, for example, for quite a few years, actually, in the beginning of my stay here in Australia, I was still able to, even though I was mainly working in the social support area, but if people had questions that were a little bit more specific, it was nice to have the background knowledge to help them along the way and say, this is what happens when you go to chemotherapy, or this is what happens to your body right now, and this is what happens to the brain, this is where you forget things. So it was nice to get all that scientific knowledge that I had, or even do my own research on certain questions and help them out. Bearing in mind that I'm not their doctor, but at least I was able to help them understand a few things along the way.
Being able to translate between the science and you know, what they'll need to know.
Yeah, that's right. And it gives them a little bit more confidence and maybe some degree of contention to, or content satisfaction.
Satisfaction.
To just knowing what's happening to them. So if they're very curious and they wanted to understand what happens to their body, it was helpful to them. Unless they're shut down and didn't want to talk about it. But yeah, generally speaking, that helped a fair bit. But even I have a few social circles that might not be so scientifically relevant, but holding conversations, let's say, with business people or maybe the odd politician, it does help to have a bit more of a scientific background simply from a perspective point of view. So you're automatically more prone to understand their viewpoints and maybe think about different directions and viewpoints. And it simply makes a conversation a lot easier to have a little bit more critical thinking skills, I guess, without being the ever skeptical person that is.
Of course.
So, yeah, I guess from that point of view, so far, I've been tremendously happy with my choice to study sciences at school, but also especially at uni and pursuing it further later on. So every bit of education that I got in sciences helped me forward in many steps in life. And I would never study anything else. And so I'm pretty happy with what I've done there. Even though I may not work in medical research for the rest of my life, It's so easy to transfer these skills over to law, business, medicine, so many other areas. There are a lot of jobs out there that people don't even think of when they study sciences. Not everyone stays in sciences. Yeah. So there's in law, they have patent lawyers, for example, or you have the business, you know, running your own company. Every area out there can easily be influenced and infiltrated with a science degree. Maybe not easily, but it is possible.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's come up a lot too. So there's, I think he was a chemist, and he ended up, and after leaving academia, he ended up working as an analyst at a bank.
Oh, yeah.
So transferring those skills. But yeah, there's definitely quite a few options that people have said, you know, whether you stay in academia, go into sciences, there's so many different ways you can apply your skills. And it doesn't have to be in the pure sciences or in the pure industries that you're in.
Exactly. Yeah. And I really like that idea, just to be able to – science is like a set of tools that you can easily pack up, and you can, A, travel with it wherever you want to go, so you can study it everywhere. Everyone understands science. It's the same language. The laboratory experiments are the same. And or you can pack it up and move fields altogether, and you have a valuable set of tools already ready for the next career shift. Oh,
yeah.
For a career shift.
Yeah, definitely. Like, so many opportunities available depending on where you want to go.
Yeah, you're certainly not stuck with it. That's for sure. It's just too broad, that area. So
yeah,
incredibly worth it.
Brilliant. Cool. So we might go on to some of those other questions. What hobby or interests do you have that's most unrelated to your field of work.
So as we mentioned earlier on, there's cycling already. So
yes.
I do love cycling. I do like sports in general, which is nice. I guess that would be something that is most away from sciences. I do like long distance riding as well. Clears the mind for a while until nightfall comes. It's not so clear anymore. But yeah, I guess that's probably the most important hobby. I do like an awful lot of things, I must say, that are outside of the world of science. I like cultural experiences just as much, and I'm a big fan of the outdoors. I like camping and just getting out there and just enjoy standing in a forest and one of those meadows.
Yeah, just embracing the trees.
Yeah, I do actually. I do like trees a lot. Someone actually gave me a book on trees once. It was a joke at the time, but it was pretty fitting.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And there's a lot of science in trees as well, by the way, especially when you look at how they communicate with amongst each other using their root system. There was an article a few years ago by the New Scientist, and they were basically saying the five senses of trees, and that was incredible. So there's science everywhere, wherever we go. And you appreciate nature a lot more if you have a little bit of background knowledge about how things work. It doesn't have to be deep understanding, but it certainly fuels the imagination if you have to solve problems that you have no clue about, like the universe.
Yeah. It adds to the magic.
Yeah, and it certainly provides you some creativity and some ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, endurance cycling, how did you get into that?
I can't remember, quite frankly. I can't remember. But I've always been that person that that sees a corner at the end of a road and I need to know what's behind it. And then you get around the corner and you see another one. You said, oh, yeah, I go there and then I look what's behind there. So basically, and that's what I do all day long until I run out of steam. And I guess cycling was just very fitting there because you just keep going just for another hour and another 30 Ks or something. Or and just kept going. And I really enjoy the process of it. So it's not so much about getting to the final goal with cycling, is for me anyway. It's about the whole movement. And I just enjoy doing the activity of cycling. Just how I started doing it. So I do remember in one of your earlier podcasts, you had Beck Whedon on. And she also is a cyclist, but a very different one. She likes to get to the finish line as quickly as possible. Incredibly successful at that in competition. Whereas I'm a little bit of the opposite. I take my time and I even watch the scenery in races. So, but yeah, it's just different styles.
It is different styles. But, you know, you've achieved so much with endurance cycling though. Like you know, unconfirmed record for the 24-hour road race in Busselton. That's what, 700 and something kilometers?
Just in the third year.
Yeah, so, and that's in 24 hours. That's nuts.
Yeah, that's something that I got into. I've done a few 24-hour races in the meantime and a few long-distance races as well and multi-days. But it's it's an interesting one, definitely. I do not have any idea anymore how it all started, but I realized I was good at it and I just kept at it. And I think it's the pain management. So after a while you get a lot of pain and you feel pain, and then you start thinking about what pain actually is, and then you start thinking about, oh, can I control it? Because technically it's only what the brain tells you, but the brain tells you things much earlier than is really necessary. And then you try and, you know, set new boundaries and maybe you push them just to see how you react. And it becomes an awful lot of experimenting and it's really just a science study in itself. And then you just keep going and going and going and try and understand what the body does right now. And I think I'm just so busy thinking about these things that I forget to give up. So people drop like flies, whereas I'm still busy thinking about what's going on. And that's how I just kept going all the time. But it's a tremendous experience for sure. Not just an experiment, it's also an experience. Just to understand the body, what it does, and just to push limits is interesting to feel alone. It's good.
Yeah.
But there's certainly more in the pipeline in the near future and trying to make it all a little bit more confirmed and whatnot. So we see what the future holds in that regard.
Oh, yes, definitely. Especially after the Race Across America last year as well.
Yeah, didn't
Oh.
know that was that well known. But yeah, that was a tough one indeed. I haven't got that many memories, and my
Oh,
brain was shutting down a
blanked
bit.
it
But it's just very tough. You ride for days and days and days without any sleep. And I think I got an accumulated 3 hours of sleep in 6 days or something.
Oh my
So
goodness.
it was a tough one. It's certainly quite a push for the body.
Oh my goodness. Like I don't remember the exact details, and I'm probably making it up now, but there was a apparently in the SAS handbook or something like that, they were talking about how there's only a certain amount of sleep that you can do without before you will basically shoot at anything that moves. And I'm thinking 3 hours over 6 days probably breaches
Yeah,
that threshold.
it definitely does. And talking about the SAS handbook, I believe it is officially a sign of torture if you get that little sleep. And so if someone else forces you to do it, it's officially against human rights laws. But
Oh my goodness.
given that
Does
you
it count
push
when
through,
it's masochism?
yeah, I wasn't aggressive though. I know that for sure. I was pretty mellow for the entire time. I was probably too sleepy anyway. No.
Oh, wow.
But I do remember I had a couple of great hallucinations, but they always involved animals. And
Hallucinations.
yeah, you know, like gorilla here and there, a little monkey. And you see animals a lot. You know how you have the delusions where there's maybe a letterbox in the far distance and you think it's, I don't know, a monkey or a horse or something. So our brain plays an awful lot of tricks, and our brain is fascinating ass if you know a
Yes.
little bit more about it. And to put it under so much stress that it gives you such false readings is pretty exciting. It's actually quite interesting.
Exciting to some, nerve-wracking for others.
There's certainly a lot of science in endurance cycling, that's for sure.
Oh wow. So how long did it take to train for something like the Race Across America?
Look, I don't think there's ever a point when you're ready for it. You just go for it. You need to do a fair bit of training, and your body adjusts only over time. So ideally, in ultra endurance cycling, you want to be in the scene for a good 10 years before the body is really used to these things, and adapted accordingly. The immune system is always an issue. Fluid retention issues, especially in women, is a problem. So hormonal imbalances, there's a lot of things that the body has to adapt to very slowly. But again, medical science is a big deal in races like that.
Of course.
And I just make use of a little bit of research and knowledge and hope that we'll fix problems in the future.
Wow, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, we're trying to make it exciting. I guess you only have that one life, right? You might as well try and use it to the fullest and to the best you can.
Yes.
Of society anyway, somehow.
Oh, wow. Yeah, definitely. Oh, so are you still training for your next endurance?
I'm trying to get a little fit again. During COVID times, I've ridden my bike, but it wasn't anything overly strenuous. So I'm
Yeah.
just ticking away nicely and trying to get ready for the next year and see what next year brings. Yep, definitely.
Wow, brilliant. It's fantastic. Be looking forward to seeing how you go with that.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, you've got a
Yeah, of course.
fan. No, we see it. Look, there's a lot of great people out there. Look, the more intense your work is, I always reckon the more intense your passion is for a hobby outside the work. I think maybe that's what science does to you. You do everything to an extreme. Nothing is just moderate.
That does seem to be a trend.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of people out there that take their job very seriously and very full on, and then their work-life balance, as long as they have one, is just equally insane. I know a lot of examples like that. Must be the work pressure.
Yeah. Oh, just passion everywhere, basically.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is at the end of the day. Yeah, probably. Just a passion.
Yes. Okay, and so which childhood book holds the strongest memories for you?
I cannot answer this question at all. I used to read a lot of books when I was younger, and I do remember that all of my primary school books, I'm pretty sure all of them without exception, dealt with an awful lot of animals. And I do remember there's a, I don't know the English title of the book, but it was, I'm pretty sure you know the stories about all the animals in the woods, and then the woods were under threat by humans, and so they had to leave and get a new home. But basically, what I found interesting about that particular book was is that you've got all these different animals, and I never understood how they communicated with each other because they're I just never got that animals. Story. But anyway, I was too young for that to understand. But what it really did over the years to come, and I only just realized it not that long ago, is that I always figured that they have their own little lives and their own little perspectives. And they often came with their own little viewpoints. And in hindsight, I think that may have been a bit of a trigger to constantly try and look through someone else's eyes how they perceive an issue or see a problem. And I would probably even say that that was one of those books that made me learn how to get different viewpoints and how to see things from different angles. Because if there's a fire, then a fox and a rabbit react differently and all these things. So I always try and see things through other people's eyes. And I definitely started off with the animals.
Ah, yes, of course.
Yeah. Maybe so that's what it is.
Yes. So what was the title of that in German?
Well, I'm not sure if it's worth saying it in German right now, but it translates to When the Animals Left the Forest.
Ah, okay. Yeah. That's cool.
So yeah, it's a thick, chunky one.
Wow, nice. It sounds like a good one in any case.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially if it prompted that kind of thinking.
yeah, it definitely does. But then I've always been interested in looking through other people's eyes. Even when I was a teenager, a good friend of mine and I, we always went to the coffee shop and we always sat by the window. And as you see someone walking past, you try to imagine what his or her eyes are seeing right now as they're walking past. And see what their day was like and what they might be thinking of, and just to create the stories. And I think to nurture this kind of creativity is kind of important in sciences, so not just in kids, but just in every person. And we tend to lose that. And just trying to see different viewpoints, maybe that's the last remnant of this creativity that we used to have when we were all younger.
Yeah, definitely. Just being able to think outside the box and just visualize and imagine other perspectives.
Yes, yeah. And it's actually great fun. You just come up with random stories for yourself and you never find out whether they were true or not, but it was a fun.
The fun's in the speculation.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Oh, we're good at that, at least, and humans. Yes.
Oh, yeah, we are. Yeah, it's great. Mm. Okay, and lastly, what advice would you give someone who wants to do what you do, or what advice should they ignore?
Okay, so that's a good question. It's always difficult to answer questions like this, but as I said earlier on, I think one of the biggest things is to stay as open-minded as you possibly can, and even if students are still at school, to just embrace all the different subjects as best as they can. At the end of the day, they're all of value to some degree or the other, even though it might not be that obvious right now. I mean, even English class might be very valuable later on, just to experience the creativity in the stories or poems or whatever is being discussed, or even just allow for different viewpoints, just to accept and just be open-minded to criticism. Because at the end of the day, if it's constructive criticism, that's what shapes you at the end of the day, and you're turning into a human being that is based on this constructive criticism, and it's really not a bad thing whatsoever, and it shouldn't be soul crushing. And I think just to learn to deal with that and to learn with to be criticized is a tremendous trait to have that will only be a positive thing later on. But yeah, in terms of what I do, back to that question, sorry. So not only embrace
good advice
or different subjects, but also if you want to just study and get into dementia research, for example, or neurosciences in general. So my PhD at the end of the day was in neurosciences. They're very very good universities out there that let you have it. But at the end of the day, you don't have to be an A1 student to get into this. Just have the passion, get into it. Sometimes there are different ways of getting to these jobs. Some people don't even finish high school, and somehow they end up in these miraculously high positions in the world of sciences, and for good reason, because they're smart and you don't need to be a genius, but they're passionate about it, and it goes to show. So just be embracing of whatever you can and take opportunities. There are so many opportunities, and we probably miss 80% of them, but just be brave and just try and take risks. That's probably one thing that I've done a lot, is I made a lot of mistakes, mind you. But at the end of the day, I don't really regret any of them, because we live in such a risk-averse society these days. Everything has to have a procedure and a policy and whatnot, which is fine to a certain degree. But at the end of the day, it kind of impacts how we live our lives as well. And we don't tend to take risks anymore. Everything is a set plan. Like, you finish school and then you have to go to uni or to TAFE at least, or and then you have to have a job and a family, and there's no room for traveling, there's no room for a gap year. Maybe for some it is, but not necessarily. And even in their gap year, the students still work at least, and it's good to get work experience, mind you, it's nothing wrong with it, but it's kind of important that they develop and make mistakes and learn. And I know we live in a world where we shelter our kids a lot, and obviously that's important, but it's much more important, I think, to explain to
them to experience life.
Yes, and make their own decisions and learn to stand up for themselves and say no if they have to say no. So that's valuable lessons, and I learned plenty of them, and I'm grateful for them. And just take a risk here and there.
Yes.
Not a stupid one.
But yeah, you don't have to know what the outcome is before you decide to do something.
No, that's true. And there are many ways of getting to your job in the end. And maybe it's not within 3 or 4 years. Maybe it's in 10 years' time. But there are reasons. There are always lessons to be learned in between if things don't work out the straightest way. So the very last thing that life is about is it's never a straight line. There's always a zigzag line. And sometimes you have to go backwards by 5 steps in order to make one step forward into the right direction, or what is right for you. And definitely happens to everyone. Like, we get knocked down on so many occasions, and that's good. It's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. Builds so, resilience.
I feel like I just gave you a prayer.
Yeah. Well, it's a positive affirmation. Like, you just got to take chances, see where things go, keep your mind open. Yeah.
If you really want to go for what you want to do, you have to take chances at all times, and you have to prepare to miss out on opportunities sometimes, but at least you tried.
Exactly. And you have to be prepared to fail sometimes as well.
Oh, yeah. It will happen. There's no way out.
Exactly. Hmm. Well, yeah, brilliant advice. Definitely. Yeah. Good to keep in mind.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much, Sabine, for speaking with me today. It has been very interesting conversation. It was all little segues. It's been fantastic. Definitely so much to think about. So if people would like to learn more about you and what you do, where can they find out?
First of all, thank you. I'm more than happy to leave. I can be contactable through you by all means. But now people are more than welcome to message me or email me, and I'm happy to leave my address in the notes, in the show notes.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, so thanks again. It's been wonderful, and I hope you have an amazing day.
Thank you very much. You too. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks, Eve.
Yes, I did. Thanks. Sabine's passion for STEM fields is evident, and it has been fascinating to learn more about the approaches different countries take towards education and training. It's so important to give the next generation support, to teach them critical thinking skills, and provide opportunities to broaden experiences. All these things will allow them to fully explore not just the direct and indirect opportunities available in these fields, but also their own potential. To learn more about Sabine and what we discuss on this show, or to connect with us, please visit the Steam Powered website at steampoweredshow.com. If you enjoy this conversation, please let me know. Subscribe to this channel, leave a comment below, and share this with your geeky and geek curious friends. You can also support Steam Powered on Patreon and Ko-fi under Steam Powered Show, the links for which will also be in the show notes. Thanks for watching!